Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It with Allison Stewart. It's Christmas Eve, and we're hoping to keep you in that holiday spirit. I mean, who doesn't love a holiday tune? Okay, sometimes you don't love all the holiday tunes, but we have something special for you. Country music musician Shelley Wright decided to put out a Christmas collection. She didn't just opt for reworking holiday standards. Instead, the prolific singer-songwriter opted to record a collection of her original compositions, some of them written more than a decade ago and recorded by artists like the Indigo Girls and Mindy Smith. The mini album is called Santa Will Find You. It's available now wherever you get your music. And we are happy to welcome Shelley Wright to the studio with your guitar.
With my guitar. Thank you, Allison. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. So this is great that you have this EP. And I love the story that I read about you and your wife and your twins and them cornering you about Santa.
Yeah, so my wife is Jewish and we're raising our kids. They're identical twin boys. They're five. We're raising them as Jewish with an observance of Christianity. I was raised as a Christian. But Santa is all we're talking about right now. This is it. This has been for the past 2 years. You know, even in July, we're able to threaten them with Santa, which is it's pretty effective that far out. So last year, we were spending the night on Christmas Eve in Pennsylvania at a family member's house. And the boys got really freaked out, like, oh, my, you know, Santa will not know where to find us. He won't know where to take our toys. Does Grandpa John have does he even have a chimney? And so I got out a song of mine that I had written that another artist had recorded, and I played her version of the song for them. And they listened, and it's a song called Santa Will Find You. And they listened, and they were just wrapped with, you know, enthusiasm. They said, oh, we get it. He's magic. I'm like, of course he's magic. So I've made my recording of Santa Will Find You, and I swear to God, I heard them in the shower the other night singing, Santa will find you wherever you are. It's really so sweet.
That's so lovely. And I also love that the story behind the song is also it's for adults who can't be around, for service members who can't be home this time of the year. When did you write this, and in what head were you?
I wrote the song in 2006, and I had already written a song called It Really Is a Wonderful Life that an artist named Mindy Smith, a brilliant singer-songwriter, had recorded or was going to record on her holiday record. So I was writing another Christmas song to try to get another song on her record. So I was specifically targeting her project. And she came over one day and I said, hey, let me just play you this little bit. And I played her what I had of Santa Will Find You. And she said, oh, I want in on that. So we finished writing it together. But what we talked about in the day that we began writing it was, you know, there were a lot of troops overseas at that time. There still are. But this was 2006. And I said, you know, let's write something that loved ones can, you know, that they would want to say to their deployed military loved one. And that's what it started out as. And then Mindy and I kind of got to talking about Christmas Eve and what it was like to spend Christmas Eve at, you know, my aunt's house or her grandmother's house, and how that will freak a kid out. You know, the only thing you care about is, can Santa track you down? Can those gifts make it to you? So that's, you know, it kind of happened in the same, there's a through line about presents for Mindy and me and our kids.
It's interesting to think about a modern songwriter, a modern country songwriter, sitting down and writing a Christmas song. I wonder what goes through your mind as you're sitting down and thinking about holiday and Christmas themes.
Well, it's different. You know, I think every country artist that's had a career that's, you know, longer than 5 years, at some point you are assumed to be planning a holiday record, a Christmas record. And this year I've had records out for 25 years, which is mind-boggling to me. It's crazy. What? but for years and years, the label would ask me, hey, is it time to make your Christmas record? I'm like, nah, I didn't want to make it just to make it. And then knowing that I had a couple of songs in my hip pocket that the Indigos had recorded and Mindy had, I felt good about, okay, I've got two, and if I make an EP, I only have to write three more. Because the thought of writing 10 original holiday songs makes me just want to jump off the top of a building. That sounds like hell to me. So I teamed up with a couple of other songwriters that I know and love and have long friendships with, and we wrote a few more songs, and it was easy. It was like this record just kind of came together.
D- Did you have themes you wanted to cover? We talked about worrying about Santa, or just, and that's also a song about just being forgotten too. You take it out of the Christmas mind.
Yeah. I wanted to write songs that reflected what Christmas meant to me as a kid. Christmas for me as an adult was really hard. I was in the closet. I had a 12-year relationship with a lovely gal that, you know, of course our love affair didn't survive. Nothing grows in the dark. Mm-hmm. But the holidays were hard for us, and that began a time of negotiation of, you'll go there on Christmas Eve and I'll go here. And it was an understood that we could never really have that time together. So for me, I wanted to write about the holidays as a kid, kind of the magic and the joy and the wonder of that. But inevitably, you know, some of the darker stuff kind of found its way in, as is often the case with me. And I wanted to write about what people's real experiences are during the holidays. And there's a song called Christmas Isn't Christmas Time that I wrote with my friend Richard Marks. And we really kind of wrote it about my sister-in-law's mother who had passed away. And I watch Marcy kind of continue on with the holiday, you know, celebrations every year. But I know it's just not the same without her mom.
And that's something that so many people are going through, especially people sort of in our vintage. This is the first Christmas without a loved one for a lot of people.
It's hard. Yeah. And you can put the tree up and you can sing the carols and you can wrap the presents. But Christmas just isn't Christmas time without having, you know, those people that helped you create your Christmas memories. When they're gone, then that, you know, there seems to be kind of a part that you can never get back.
It is a time, an opportunity. This is what we did in my family, to make new traditions.
Amen to that.
That's what we decided.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that my record will be a part of the new soundtrack to some new traditions. Did you lose someone recently?
No, in the past couple of years, my parents passed away close in time together. Yeah. And so it was just, they were the center of where we went. But we realized we can honor them, but we can start our own traditions.
For sure.
And we switched it up, and now we go to Martha's Vineyard for Christmas, which is like a fairy, old-timey fairyland up there. It's really beautiful, you know? So it's nice. It's I'd do anything to be able to have Christmas with them, but it's really lovely to start these new things that I can pass along to my son.
Yeah. How long between the deaths of your folks?
2.5 years. And they were,
it's pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, it's that thing they always say about people who are in love forever and ever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
But my mom was tough. She hung around much longer than we thought. She
did
was
she?
Tough.
Was she? How did she pass, may I ask?
She did it the way you want to do it. Just had a massive stroke.
Okay.
And then she was like, I'm done. I'm out. I'll be looking down.
Peace out.
She really did peace out. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I keep thinking, like, you know, that's okay.
That's
okay.
Big shock, though.
But she had such a spectacular life.
You know, what did she do?
She was a high school teacher.
Why did I know? Why did I instinctively know you were going to say that? She's a leader.
Yeah, you know what? I get emails occasionally because she's been in this area.
Yeah, okay.
From people who had her as a student and talk about what a significant person she was in their life, you know?
Teachers are everything.
They're it.
They make you or they break you. What did she teach, English?
No, biology.
Oh.
Which was kind of radical for a black woman in the 50s, 60s. She was out there.
And was your father a teacher as well?
No, he was a fancy business guy.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Fancy business guy.
Fancy business guy.
Meets woman who shapes the hearts and minds
high
of young
school,
people.
High school sweethearts.
Yeah. Oh, were they?
Okay. How about that?
Well, that's why it was quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your father died of a broken heart.
Yeah. No, it was the other way around.
Okay.
Other way around.
Yeah.
Other way around. You're writing a country song about a Christmas country song about my family.
Yeah. I mean, it happened. My grandparents, with whom I was very close, died within 6 weeks of one another.
Oh,
and
wow.
They'd been married for 50 years. And when grandma died first, unexpectedly, and I flew home for her funeral. And my grandfather had a heart attack the night I landed, right the night before her funeral. And I sat with him all night before I had to go to the funeral home for her funeral. And I said, Grandpa, I said, I gotta go. I gotta go take a shower and get ready for Grandma's funeral. And he said, you tell her I'll see her in a minute.
Oh,
And it wasn't long, and he just couldn't make it without her.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
ain't
love.
Love something.
It's love.
Good stuff. It's good stuff.
That's love. We're talking to Shelley Wright about her Christmas EP. You're going to play a song for us called It's Really a Wonderful Life.
It really is.
It really is.
A Wonderful Life. So I kind of ripped off the great movie. Because if you're going to steal, you steal from the best. but this was, I wrote this on Christmas Eve, about, I guess, 13 years ago. You'll want me to tune this, Allison.
Okay.
It's going to take an extra 20 seconds, but you'll be glad I did. So will I. So will your listeners. All right. And I've got a little bit of the lingering 2018 virus, but I think I can make it.
That makes it authentic.
The snow is falling like it does every year. The tree I know so well is aglow. And folks are filled up with their usual holiday cheer as they hang pretty lights and mistletoe. Oh, but this year is different for you and for me. Our own little miracle on our own little street. Never before have I loved silent nights, but now that you're here by my side, baby it is, it really is a wonderful life. Ba da ba 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 da 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 da. I'd never noticed that the crackle of a fire makes music when accompanied by a kiss. When did I start having dreams about pumpkin pies? There's not a lot that's sweeter than this. Oh, but this year is better for you and for me. Our own little miracle on our own little street. Never before have I loved silent nights, but now that you're here by my side, darling, with you by my side, baby it really is a wonderful life. Ba da ba 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 da 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 da. Ba da ba 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 da 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 da.
We're with Shelley Wright. The name of her EP is Santa Will Find You. I love that. That makes me want to twirl. It makes me think of dancing with somebody, sort of twirling.
It's a little love song.
It's
adorable. It's a holiday love song.
A holiday love song. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you were talking about, and you said it very casually, I was in the closet and I was in this relationship for a long time. And I'm not, for people who don't know, you were closeted for a large part of your country music career. And
yeah.
When you came out of the closet, you did it in a big old way on TV with Oprah. There was a documentary, the whole thing.
Yeah.
When you look back on it, would you have done anything differently?
When I look back on it, I wish I'd done it sooner. But the way that I did it, I wouldn't change a thing about it. I realized that I could have just tweeted or MySpace at the time, hey y'all, I'm gay, but I wanted to tell the very kind of nuanced story of what it's like to hide the essence of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think had I come out in a press release or in a tweet, I think the narrative could have been lost, and I wanted to really kind of control that. And since I'm a writer, I wrote a book, and I wanted to talk about, I guess I thought I was writing a book about a country singer who comes out, but at the end of my book, I realized what I wrote about was about my faith practice and about what it's like to exist in a world that you don't feel like you really totally belong in, and how it kills you when you kind of suffocate the essence of who you are. It doesn't matter what your secret is. If it's that you're gay, or that maybe you grew up poorer than your colleagues think you grew up,
mm-hmm.
or something happened in your house when you were a kid and you didn't talk about it. Those things, they need to come out. you have to find a way to talk about, you know, what made you and who you are. And I was dying an emotional, physical, spiritual death, and so I'm really proud of the way I came out.
I also have to imagine, as a creative person, it must have really had an impact on your creativity to not be able to be true.
Yeah, you know, in songwriting, I think I just hit my microphone. In songwriting, it was really the only way and the only place where I did feel authentic. I mean, when I would do interviews on TV or radio, much of what I was talking about felt not authentic. You know, there's a clip in the documentary film of my coming out, Wish Me Away, in which Dick Clark is asking me, he's got me on the couch somewhere, he's interviewing me for something, and he's really probing, and, you know, who are you dating now? You're single. And I can just see the discomfort that I had. And I had ways to kind of ward that off and be coy and talk about other things. Oh, I'm so busy. I'm married to my career. And those ways, I was very, you know, I was telling a big fat lie. But with the music and with writing songs, that to me felt genuine, even if I was using pronouns like he or him. About a love interest, I felt, 'cause I knew who I was singing about.
You knew what
about.
You were talking about, yeah. Right.
And you know, and I often say that, like in songwriting, my job is to tell a story and kind of evoke an emotion or try to paint a picture, much in the way that, you know, I'm pretty sure Johnny Cash didn't shoot a man in Reno, just watch him die. You know, this is the job of a storyteller in country music or folk or Americana music. So that was the one place where I felt most honest. But I will say this, hiding was a full-time job.
Exhausting, too.
Exhausting. So when I quit hiding, when I came out, I really felt like I had twice as much time. I felt like I had this other job, this other 60-hour-a-week job, and I just retired from it. It was awesome to just kind of quit that. And just now I spend my time, you know, being authentically me, and it's much easier.
You live in New York City now, right?
I do, yeah.
Did you ever think about being in Nashville?
About coming out in Nashville?
Yeah.
No, I think that's why I moved here. Mm-hmm. I moved here as I was writing my book. So I moved from Kansas City when I was 18 to Nashville, lived there 20 years through the very zenith of my career. The biggest, you know, highlights of my career were happening there when I was in the closet. I decided to come out in 2007 and started my book that summer and moved to New York in 2008. My publisher, Random House, is here. And I just meant to move here for a year so I could just kind of find some peace. Mm-hmm. I moved to New York City for peace and quiet and wrote my book. And I really thought I would go back to Nashville. But then I met my wife, and she's a native New Yorker. And we got married, and we have the boys. And so here I am.
Can you find inspiration for country songs in New York City?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just ride the 6 train up and down, and you've got like a whole album written. You know, in a day's commute.
We're speaking with Shelley Wright. She has a new Christmas EP out. They call them Old Days an EP, right?
Yeah.
We'll call it that.
Yeah.
You also, I read, you said you're from Kansas City, that you helped start an LGBTQ center in Kansas City. Is that right?
That's right. We'd never had one in Kansas City. And I say we because I will always consider Kansas City my hometown. And after I came out, I found that, you know, there are a lot of great opportunities to use my voice in a public way, which was my whole plan for coming out, mm-hmm. to not just save my life, but try to maybe move the needle, especially in places where the needle needed to be moved a bit more, primarily, you know, the Midwest, Nashville, the music industry, country radio. So I was very uniquely positioned to, you know, kind of help move things along. And Kansas City had never had an LGBT center, and so we started the Like Me Lighthouse. And we had a 5-year plan that we opened the doors. We were open for 5 years, and now the Kansas City community, I think it's called the Center for Inclusion now in Kansas City. But that was a real, you know, coup for my team, and I'm really proud of that.
You mentioned country music. It had to have had an impact on your career coming out. If there's another country music artist who's thinking about coming out, what advice would you give them?
I know there are, mm-hmm. because I'm talking to them. You know, we're having dialogue. And it's, you know, I think from the outside looking in, perhaps it's easy for people to say, people don't care anymore, you should just come out. But it you know, when it's your story and it's when it's your career that you've worked really hard to frame, and coming out is really was one of the hardest things about coming out for me, was I had to kind of acquiesce to the fact that I'd become a very skilled liar. That's really humiliating to have to write in a book and talk about it in interviews. But I decided to put my ego aside, and you know, for the betterment of my life and maybe others, hopefully, that's something that I'm willing to acknowledge. It's not so easy for everyone to acknowledge that. Some of my colleagues have gotten married before to cover up and hide the fact that they're gay. Some have had a very orchestrated effort with their management and labels and publicists to hide this big lie. So all in good time, and I think everyone will come out when they feel, as I say, safe and able.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that that's the moment. I often say it's worth it to hide until the very moment it's not. And that time is different for everyone. So what I say to my colleagues who are considering coming out, and what I would say to those that I don't know about, come out when you feel safe and able.
Would you say the same? I'm thinking, you know, it's holiday season, and sometimes people decide to talk to their families during mm-hmm. this time, and somebody might be considering it. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to that person who maybe is listening right now?
I would say don't do it on Christmas Day. Don't do it on Thanksgiving Day. But if that's something that's important to you to talk about during this holiday season, carve out a moment with your folks, or you know, if it's that you finally just, you think everybody knows, but you finally just want to say it, which is often the case, find a moment. And here's what I would say. Here's what I've said to some people that I've come out to. I am about to tell you something that I don't have to tell you. I want to tell you. Because I want us to grow closer and not further apart. And my big secret is causing me to not pick up the phone when you call. My big secret is causing me to opt out of this dinner with the family. My big secret is causing me to not bring somebody I care about home to meet you. So I don't have to tell you this. I want to tell you this.
I know you said don't do it on Christmas or Thanksgiving, but this is sort of a season of having open hearts and mm-hmm. big spirits. It might be a good time.
Because there's that big dead spot in Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Which you get up, you know, the dead spot.
Yes.
You get up, you open the presents, and then
you're silly.
Right? That's the moment.
We're talking to Shelley Wright. Santa Will Find You is her holiday EP. Anything else you want to tell me about the holiday EP before I ask you to play us a song out?
Well, I need to tune one more string.
Okay.
So we're on vinyl now.
Ooh.
Which is exciting because I've never had a record out on vinyl except my first couple of singles that came out when we did vinyl singles.
Wow.
So
that's exciting. And vinyl's warm. There's a warmth there.
Yeah. It just, you can't replicate that sound without vinyl. Do you remember Richard Marx?
I do. I think he's married to a friend of mine now.
Okay, I wondered if maybe you and Daisy were still pals.
Yes.
I love that Daisy Fuentes. She's all of that.
Yeah, I got stories.
You do? Okay. I love her. And I love her mostly because she makes Richard happy. Richard's been my friend for a lot of years, 20 years, and I just love it. Richard and I wrote this song in their living room in Malibu.
Oh, right on.
And then Richard's wife and my wife walked in and listened to what we'd just written, and they gave us the thumbs up or the thumbs down, fix that second verse, and we did. So, Allison, thank you for having me in today.
It was my pleasure. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, many good things to you.
And to you. This is called Christmas Isn't Christmas Time. I wish I'd known that we would lose it all. Hold on. Wrong fret. I wish I'd known that we would lose it all. It would be the last time we would deck the halls. And though the memories we made come shining through, Christmas isn't Christmas time without you. You love the holly and the mistletoe, always the first to have your tree aglow. And now the star you loved, it shines a dimmer blue. Christmas isn't Christmas time without you. It may be December and the snow is on the ground. Bells are ringing, children singing, Santa's back in town. But I can't seem to find it, the magic we once knew. Christmas isn't Christmas time without you. Christmas isn't Christmas time without you.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
This is the Municipal Broadcasting System. New York City's own station, WNYC, in the city where more than 7 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy.
And now it's time to take a trip through the WNYC archives with the station's chief archivist, Andy Lancet. This week, we thought we'd visit the ghosts of Christmas past here at WNYC. The station's been on the air for more than 90 years, and Andy has dug out some tape that highlights the different ways the station has commemorated the holidays over the years. Happy holidays, Andy.
And to you, too.
So what are some of the ways the station marked Christmas in its early years?
Well, early on, the Police Athletic League had a regular variety show where they aired kids singing songs, playing skits, instruments, etc., all this around starting 1938. And there was usually a holiday PAL edition, somewhat like this.
He's making a list and checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout.
The station also had regular broadcasts from the Christmas tree lightings around town. We're looking at Madison Square Park as well as City Hall Park, and here's Borough President Stanley Isaacs at the 1939 ceremony.
There are some who seem to think that we should not cut down our trees for these purposes. And they are so wrong. Our trees grow in the forests, and they're used for many purposes. Some were cut down to form the masts of lofty masts of ships in the older days. Some are cut down to furnish timber for our houses. Some have the more humble purpose of being turned into pulp that makes paper to carry the spoken and the written word. But what loftier purpose can be served by this beautiful tree that stands here, than to stand forth in City Hall Park as the emblem of our real civilization, as that emblem of peace and goodwill that we need to show to the peoples of this city that we are a peaceful nation, that our citizens from all lands are here living peacefully together, and that we breathe to the people of all the world peace and goodwill.
Oh, okay, so we had kids, check. Christmas trees, check. Anything quirkier? Did you find anything weirder?
Sure. Well, here's a segment from what was called Operation Santa Claus, which was a charitable effort in 1948 with WNYC staffers going all the way to Canada with kids to meet Santa.
Would you like to put your pack down, Santa?
Yes, I think so. Oh, a little heavy. Oh.
Santa has a big pack with him, and he's putting it down in front of our three guests. Santa, first, I'd like to have you meet Harry Riviera.
Hello, Santa.
Hello, Harry.
How's the weather up in the North Pole?
Oh, quite cold, you know. We have a nice representative weather here. Look at that beautiful white snow out there.
Reminds me of my home up there very much. Would you like to fly up to the North Pole sometime?
Sure. How about now?
Oh, you're ready to go. Is there anything special that you want for Christmas?
Well, I'd like a doll for my sister.
A doll? Well, I think we can even arrange that right now.
And he has just given the doll to Harry Riviera. How do you like the doll, Harry?
Seems pretty nice. I think my sister will like it a lot.
I think Santa had a cocktail. Just saying. No proof.
Maybe.
Maybe.
They were in Montreal, by the way.
Well, that explains it. It happened in Canada. So anyway, in all seriousness, obviously at Christmas time, there are a lot of church services. We see them on television now. Did WNYC ever capture some of the Christmas services?
Yes, they actually did. In 1946, they aired what you could call a city church sampler. And they had a lot of help in this case from the Voice of America. But they went all around town.
We turn now to the teeming heart of this great city and to the cathedral which is host to visitors from all over America, all over the world. St. Patrick's, where pigeons hover over the broad steps leading into the church and where shoppers of all faiths stop in for peaceful worship.
That's very lovely.
But, you know, present-day WNYC has some holiday traditions
they do?
Of its own.
I'm new here. Fill me in.
Well, there's been a regular performance of A Christmas Carol in the green space, and Radiolab listeners should recognize this voice.
Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having beguiled himself for the rest of the evening with his bank book, he went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to Marley, his deceased partner. They were a gloomy suite of rooms in a lowering pile of a building up a yard. Nobody lived in it but Scrooge, the other rooms being all let out as offices. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands.
And of course, other WNYC personalities have participated in these productions, including Richard Hake, Brooke Gladstone, and John Schaefer. And they've even brought in some professional actors like Kathleen Turner and David Hyde Pierce.
And for the record, that was Crowich.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear. Thanks to WNYC Chief Archivist Andy Lancet and the New York City Municipal Archives. And Andy, happy holidays and happy new year.
You too.
You can find these and other choice bits of WNYC history at wnyc.org/archives/collections. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with us. The holidays are a time when many people seek to give back and help those in need. And certainly in a city of more than 8.5 million people, there's no shortage of ways to help your fellow New Yorkers. If you're trying to figure out where to donate or volunteer your time this holiday season, we've got some good news for you. It's never too late. Our friends at Curbed have compiled a list of local charities and community groups. Curbed's New York editor, Amy Plitt, puts it all together, and she's going to walk us through it. Thanks for coming to the studio, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Amy, you're an organized person. You split it into two categories,
yeah.
Donate and volunteer. Let's start with NYC Books Through Bars program. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got books laying around that they just think could have a new home.
Yeah, absolutely. And NYC Books Through Bars started in 1996, so they've been doing this for, you know, about 20 years now. They donate books to incarcerated men and women in New York. You know, it's not always easy to get books into prisons, so they go out of their way to make sure that people are getting the reading material that they want and need. That being said, you can't take any book there. They don't accept hardcovers. They have a pretty strict list of books that are allowed to be donated. They always want dictionaries. They always want mass market paperback fiction books. They especially want historic fiction or even histories that deal with African-American history, Latino history, things like that. But a great thing they do that's really easy for people who want to donate to them is they have a wish list through Greenlight Bookstore in Brooklyn, and you can just go on Greenlight's website and find a book that you would want to send to a person, and it's just as easy as that.
You mean like a new book? Like if I want to buy a book and send it? Or
yeah, you know, I think they'll take a book from Greenlight, just a paperback that's on their wish list, and you can send it. It's like doing an Amazon wish list, but doing some good.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's
very
great.
Cool. University Settlement is one of New York's more historic
nonprofits. Mm-hmm. What do they do?
Yeah, they've been around for more than 130 years. They started on the Lower East Side. They still have a community center on the Lower East Side. They do a lot of help with New York families. So things like early childhood care, youth programs like mentorship. They also do a lot with older New Yorkers, like adult literacy programs, and helping elderly New Yorkers at their community centers. So you can volunteer for any of those kinds of things.
Oh, just be like a, just to be the helper. That's not necessarily a money or a thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's an opportunity to actually be there and engage.
Yeah, you can do that. You can donate money too, though, and that's always helpful.
We're talking to Amy Plitt, editor at Curbed New York. She's coming to the studio to help us figure out ways that we can help our fellow New Yorkers who need assistance this holiday season. Our number here is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Maybe you know of a local charity that deserves recognition for the work that it does, or you want to offer a way to help fellow New Yorkers. Maybe you know something, someplace we can volunteer. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Okay, we all see coat drive ads. Mm-hmm. Is there one main organization that takes care of this, or are these satellite organizations?
So New York Cares is the organization that does the main big coat drive that people probably know. It's advertised on the subway. You probably mm-hmm. have walked past one of its donation centers because they have them in Grand Central Terminal and Penn Station. So that's the one that people are really familiar with. It's been going on for 30 years now. And this year, they're hoping to collect and distribute 130,000 coats. 130,000 coats
wow.
to New Yorkers. And the great thing about this is you can donate, like I said, at Penn Station or at Grand Central, which, you know, every New Yorker pretty much passes through during the holiday season if you have a gently used coat. Mm-hmm. They also take them at NYPD Precinct, so you can do it there. And you can also look on New York Cares' website and find a donation center that might be near you.
And it has to be gently worn. Any other?
Gently worn, clean. They always emphasize that they need coats for children and coats that are sizes XL or above. So, you know, anything you might have laying in your closet will probably work as long as it's not in bad condition. But those are the things they're always kind of looking for the most.
I remember another place I worked. They always mm-hmm. said if you wouldn't necessarily if you wouldn't wear it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the condition you could consider. Mm-hmm. Even if it's slightly worn, would you wear this out? Would you put this on your own child?
Right.
That should be your threshold.
That's a good way to look at it.
Can people still contribute to New York Cares in other ways?
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things is if you don't actually have a coat to donate, you can just text coat, the word coat, to the number 41444. And this information is on New York Cares' website. But you can text them and they'll, you know, get back to you and ask you for a financial donation. And $20, they say, provides one coat to a New Yorker through their organization. So you can donate funds and know that you're helping in that way.
Would you say that again, just for folks who maybe ran to get a pencil?
Yeah. You text the word coat, COAT, to the number 41444, and that will hook you up with a text donation thing from New York Cares.
Okay. We have a caller on line one, Nell from Manhattan. Nell wanted to add something to the conversation. Hi, Nell.
Hi. You know, I heard from charities in the past that they have plenty of volunteers, most of them, for this last couple of weeks of the year, but that what really would be helpful is volunteers starting in the new year, and also just to emphasize that a check, that they can use a check and it can go much further because they can buy things in bulk at a cheaper rate, and it's kind of uses their resources less. So I don't want to discourage anybody, but I'm wondering if the person could talk about that the needs continue year-round and that they're not really in such great need, at least for volunteers, in the last couple of weeks of the year.
Nell, thank you so much for calling in. Does Nell have is that true? There's a drop-off?
Yeah, I mean, I think people think about giving back this time of year because naturally we're talking about giving and, you know, giving spirit and all that stuff. So it's top of mind right now, but it's really important, like Nell said, to continue doing this throughout the year because this isn't the only time of year when people need help in New York. It's really important to continue that that giving spirit throughout the year. And oftentimes, yes, charities will say it's better to donate money than supplies or even trying to, like, come in during such a busy time of year because they can't make that go further.
We're talking to Amy Plitt, editor at Curb New York. She's put together this amazing list of places where you can make donations and places where you can also volunteer this time of year, and as we just said, all year long. If you want to join the conversation, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. So Housing Works, a lot of people know about Housing Works, but for those who don't, who are they and what can we give to Housing Works?
Yeah, so Housing Works was founded in 1990. It is an organization that helps people who are living with HIV and AIDS who are homeless or low income. So doing a lot of really good things in the past, you know, 28 years. And people are probably familiar with them through their thrift shops and the Housing Works bookstore downtown. Mm-hmm. So those places all actually do take different things like furniture or clothes or books. And when they sell things through their thrift shops or their bookstores, 100% of those profits go straight back into the work that they're doing. So helping people, you know, with medical needs, helping people find housing and things like that. So that's one thing to do if you, you know, find yourself with a lot of books and you want to take them somewhere. You could go to the Housing Works bookstore and donate them there. There are, of course, conditions on what they accept.
They're very particular, yeah. And that's not a criticism. It's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I found interesting when I was researching this piece is that they don't take furniture that's made with wood composites. So that's something you find a lot in IKEA furniture, for example. So if you have like a stray IKEA table, they probably wouldn't take that. But you can look on their website and find a very thorough and extensive list of what they will and will not take.
Grow NYC. This seems really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
What's Grow NYC?
Grow NYC is the organization that runs all of the green markets in the city. So if you've been to the Union Square Green Market or the one at Grand Army Plaza in Brooklyn, they're the ones who are facilitating those. And that's not the only thing they do. They also have programs that help, you know, beautify community gardens throughout the city. They have workshops with kids and different things like that to just kind of make people aware of the environmental impact and things that they're doing in the city. And it's a great organization. If you love the green markets, they're a good one to donate to.
Let's talk to Judy from Queens, who's called in. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. A while back, and I can't find the receipt that with the actual name of the place, but I donated a bunch of clothes for women who were homeless who were going on job interviews.
Dress for Success.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you'd know. And it's a wonderful thing.
They're great.
Beautiful thing. Because, you know, when women leave with the clothes on their back and their kids, you know, what are they going to do?
Yeah, it's a wonderful organization.
It really is. And you know, the woman who started it, I think it was her grandmother left her like $10,000 and told her like to go out and do good in the world.
Mm.
And that's what she started it with. It's a cool story.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Judy. I know that they do great work. Is this a good time of year to give blood, by the way, Amy?
I think every time of year is a good time of year.
How do I find if I qualify? I guess that's a better question.
Yeah, so there's the New York Blood Center, and they do a lot of collecting of blood and platelets to, you know, give out to people who need them in hospitals and medical centers. They have a list on their website of what will make someone eligible. There are a lot of different things that make you ineligible, like, you know, whether you've recently gotten a tattoo, if you've been sick, if you're pregnant, if you're on certain medications. So it's always a good idea to check that list out at New York Blood Center before you make any plans to do that.
Let's go on to the volunteering list. City Meals on Wheels.
Mm-hmm. City Meals on Wheels is a great organization. They do a lot of work with homebound and elderly New Yorkers. You can help them by, you know, signing up for a shift to do food prep. You can sign up to help deliver items to people in their homes. You can sign up to help them with office work, things like, you know, addressing postage and things like that. So there are a lot of different ways to help there.
Do I need to have a car if I want to be part of the delivery team?
No. So this is kind of cool. They work with senior centers in different neighborhoods to do food prep and things like that. And you actually, when you sign up for a shift, you'll actually walk to a person's home and deliver the food that way. So you don't need to have a car to do that.
This one I love. A lot of people think the New York City Parks Department, it feels like a big bureaucracy. But volunteers are really important, right?
Yeah, they're really important. If you've ever been to a park and noticed, like, you know, trash or there's like a tree that fell and it needs to be cleaned up, volunteers help with that kind of stuff, and they help maintain gardens, they help maintain street trees. You can find all of this information on how to do that on the Parks Department's website, and it's just a really great way for somebody who might have a green thumb to pitch in and do some good in, you know, the green spaces around the city.
Let's take a few more calls. Linda from the Bronx is on the line for... Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'd like to recommend a charity for consideration. I should say this. I think that some folks are looking for a way to be supportive of environmental improvement globally and in New York City. And a great organization for that purpose is the Bronx River Alliance. And part of what's great about it is it's also really a very community-led, community-based effort to improve the environment in the Bronx and create a place of real pride and enjoyment.
Linda, thank you so much for sharing that. Charity Navigator is a good place to go if you want to make sure your money's going where you think it's going, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. And especially with local organizations, for the most part, you know that your money is going to the right place.
Right. Diane from Brooklyn is online, too. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to add?
I wanted to say that an amazing organization to volunteer with is the New Sanctuary Coalition. The volunteer work is being part of a group that accompanies prospective citizens, people, immigrants, to hearings at courts, ICE hearings, check-ins. There are different levels of when people have to go back and forth. And the New Sanctuary Coalition arranges for between 4 and 10 people to accompany each one of these people to a hearing, just basically to be supportive, to be part of their community. And it's looked on usually very favorably by the people who are doing the hearings, although you're not necessarily allowed in with the person, but you are there. Your presence is felt.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate it, Diane, so much. I want to get to a couple more things before I let you go. We're talking to Amy Plitt. She's an editor at Curb New York, and she's put together this great, great compilation of places to volunteer and to donate. Animal lovers who want to get in on this, where should they go?
Yeah, so there are a lot of animal shelters and charities throughout the city. One that I really like and included in this piece is BARC, the Brooklyn Animal Resource Coalition. It's in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. They have programs where you can help walk dogs during the day. They especially need people for morning shifts. You know, people might want to sign up in the evening after work, but they really need morning helpers. So you're walking with dogs, you know, socializing with them and stuff like that. They also have a cat loft, so cat lovers can get in on this too, of which I am one. So they have programs during the day where you can socialize with cats before they get adopted out, which is really nice. You just kind of sit around and play with cats for like a couple hours, which sounds like my idea of heaven. So.
And at the end of your article, you have something that says, take action.
Mm-hmm.
If people have heard this and it's just, you know, you're not sure what you want to do, what does take action mean?
Yeah, so we at Curb New York really love to try and get people to engage with their communities, and volunteering and donating your time is one really great way to do it. There are a lot of other ways, though. You can get involved with your community board. You know, we just passed some the Charter Review Commission changes to the community boards passed mm-hmm. this year in the general election, and that's going to really change the process of getting involved with those. So you can do that. You can go to Landmarks Preservation Commission hearings and weigh in on landmarks that are happening or maybe getting designated throughout the city. You know, the city itself has a website called NYC Service that gives people a lot of different ways to donate time, donate money, just to get involved with different communities. So there are just so many different ways that you can become a more engaged New Yorker and help your fellow New Yorkers.
And Jeff on line four has one more way. He's going to finish out our segment for us. Jeff, what's your advice?
I'm on several nonprofit boards, and that's all wonderful. But the most gratifying thing that I do every morning is to get up and walk into Prospect Park and pick up garbage. If I see a homeless person, I have a few minutes. I'll ask if they want a cup of coffee or a bite of food. Just chatting with people on the street, helping people with their packages. This stuff is so basic and so rewarding, but it spreads love.
Just be a good person.
That's such a great thing. People always see New Yorkers as being really like aggressive and mean and uncaring, and it's just obviously not true because of things like that.
Amy Plitt, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your lists.
Thank you so much for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.